Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast by two Doom Patrologists with nowhere to look but back through the long boxes. That's because there is no Doom Patrol comic being currently published.
And as this is an audio podcast, there will be talk of things such as comics, facilitated by the combined elements of spoken language, which are phonology, syntax, semantics, morphology, and pragmatics.
But no ponies. Anyway, so I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at avantgarve, and you can also find Wilfred, the sentient show Twitter account, which is at WFDpod.
And I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. You can also find us on Facebook, and our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com. And you can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com.
So this week, we have several stops through the publication history of the DC Universe to check out, where we will see the times that the Doom Patrol have crossed paths with the Scarlet Speedster known as The Flash. After that, we'll empty the mailbag of Doom with your responses to our question of the week, which was, how and where do you store your comics? But first, Paul, my old buddy, old pal, how was your week and other week in comics and such?
Oh, it's been an eternity since we talked.
It has.
Recorded. It's been forever. And didn't the internet go bad in our absence?
This is what happens when we take a break.
Yeah.
The internet goes pear-shaped.
All hell breaks loose, yes. Yes.
We're sorry, internet. We shan't do it again. Well, yes. Unless we need
Batgirl
to.
Batgirl covers. Save the cover. Destroy the cover.
Save the plovers.
Change the cover. It's all happening. I haven't got much to talk about. At work, we had it's very exciting. We've had for a long time. We've had hand sensor taps where you just swipe your hand in front of it.
Okay.
To wash your hands, and they've finally put in hand sensor soap to go with it. So it's like you don't have to touch anything now. It's awesome.
Wow.
And you know, we need hand sensor flushing next, and doors. Then I'd get hand sensor pants just to pull themselves down.
So you'll just be waving your hand in front of your pants. Is that what? Is that how they work?
I swear that's what I was doing.
Wow.
Comics. I've been reading some Astro City. I've been reading Astro City Victory, which is the second collection of this current run of Astro City.
Okay.
Which was pretty good. Pretty good. Freak out a bit. I'm so used to Astro City coming and going and it sticking around at the moment, which is like, no, I'm not used to collecting it as an ongoing. It's always been like a series of mini-series to me. Yeah, so that's a bit of a scary commitment. And I'm a bit commitment-phobic for ongoings, I must admit.
Really?
Yeah, I'm the opposite of you.
Okay.
And other than that, just been reading some old Firestorm. From Stuart Moore and Jamal Igel.
Okay.
Which is very nice. Very good art. And plot so-so. But sometimes you got to read Firestorm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Of course. Of course.
You can get it riding a bus.
Yes. Cool.
All right, Mike, what about you? Doing the comics still?
Yeah, still doing the comics, still
buying
the comics
on the comics podcast. We do.
Yep, still talking about a comic that isn't in production. We did have some really bad storms this last weekend, and my local comic shop, the Mighty Comics Etc. here in Brisbane, Brisbane's best comic shop, they got flooded.
Shit.
They said about a quarter of their stock got damaged.
Ooh,
by water,
they're having
a
soaking sale or anything?
Well, I don't know. They've pretty much been closed since Sunday of the weekend just gone by. There haven't been any updates today, but it'll be interesting to see if they are open again in time for new comic book day this week.
Well, they better be. There'll be a lot of upset people out the front.
I'm sure given the response from their loyal customers on the Facebooks and the Twitter sphere, I'm sure everyone is quite understanding of this dramatic turn of events. But yeah, a bit of a surprise, because they're on the street level of a three-story building, so God knows what happened to the other two floors.
Every time I go to Brisbane, I get into that shop.
Oh, hey, wait, when have you been to... Never mind, we'll talk later.
Not since we've been doing this podcast.
Ah, convenient. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, read some good comics. I can't help but feel that a lot of things are coming to a close for me in terms of books that I currently get. Batman Eternal, I think it's got maybe two issues to go. Same with Alex and Ada. Mind Management just finished its... Or just started, sorry, its final arc. And this coming week, there's another couple of final issues. I think it's Red Lantern wraps up. So it's getting to... It's 2015 seems to be the year of things finishing for me.
Yeah.
In terms of books, so...
I love a good finish in a comic. Like, if a comic finishes well and you can put them all in a box and you've got the whole set, you can pull them out one day, you can read the whole lot. It's just, it's a glorious thing.
This is true. This is true.
But some comics never finish. I'm looking at you, Spider-Man.
They might not finish. They might take interesting turns. Like, Superior Spider-Man. That was brilliant. Yep. That's what got me into Spider-Man to begin with, but, you know.
Well, you're unusual.
That is not the first time I've heard that, but wait, what's that ticking noise?
Is it the Doom Punch?
It's not the Doom Punch. It's the Doom Clock.
Doom Clock me, Mike.
Okay, well, here's some Doom Clock knowledge getting dropped on ya. The last Doom Patrol book that we had in our eager little hands was issue 22 of volume 5, the Giffen Clark run. That came out in July of 2011.
What a top bloody run that was. I totally rate that.
Totally rate that.
The hell out of it.
So, yeah, we've not had that for 3 years and approximately 8 months now. So, it's time is ticking on.
That's more than a misdemeanor sentence. You know that. That's a big sentence.
Yeah, come on, DC. You know, post-convergence, don't let us down. The last appearance of the team, however, was back in October of 2014 in Justice League number 33. So about 5 months ago since we've seen the team in action. So, right.
And you'll be on Convergence Watch for Doom Patrol for me, won't you?
Well, here's the thing. With Convergence, I swore I was only going to get the main series and none of the tie-ins.
Did you swear on something...
I swore out loud.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But the Teen Titans Convergence book does have the Doom Patrol appearing, even though it's the Tangent Universe Doom Patrol.
It's a quasi.
So, yeah, I'm going to check it out maybe just...
It's one of those, I can't believe it's not the Doom Patrol. Sort of Doom Patrols. It's not believe. I don't know.
Did you ever read the Tangent Doom Patrol book back in the day?
I didn't actually, got my eye on one on eBay.
Maybe a future episode.
Maybe.
Okay. But anyway, so I'll probably check that out because that's obviously all we're going to get Doom Patrol wise during Convergence for now.
Bugger all, innit?
Very sad. Yeah. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Okay.
Okay, so this week on Doomsplaining, we are going to take a look at the two great flavors that go so good together, the Doom Patrol and the Flash. Starting back with their first team up in Brave and the Bold, number 65, from May of 1966.
Yeah, volume one of Brave and the Bold, the original team-up comic.
Yeah.
There's a reason why it's called Batman the Brave and the Bold. It's because he teams up with people on the cartoon show, and the same with the comic. People team up. It's all about teaming up nonstop. Team ups. So this one came out in probably a few months before May 65 because they changed the dates on things.
Mm.
So let's say February
1965. Sure.
So, you know, a couple of years before we were born, eh?
Just a few.
Yeah. and it's written by Bob Haney. Bob Haney, who is an insane genius the way he writes. I've heard he has little regard for continuity, but
He'd has high regard for DC then, wouldn't he?
Ooh, and high regard for great storytelling. So, and penciled by Dick Giordano, who is a legendary editor and a longtime DC person. We have a cover by a very familiar artist, Bruno Premiani.
Oh, good old Bruno.
Yeah, noted for his Doom Patrol book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's inked by Sal Trapani. That's the insides, not just the cover.
Right.
Sal Trapani. Letterer, Stan Starkman. I actually want to mention the letterer because the lettering in this is awesome. It's just so, it's, you know, it's like liquid gold on the eyes. It's beautiful.
Ooh. Ooh. Fancy.
Yeah. And I know you don't have this comic, and I don't have this comic. I borrowed it from Shmoby One.
Thanks, Shmoby One.
Thanks, Shmoby One. Friend of the show. Because he is a massive Flash nut, so he has a crazy collection of Flash stuff, and this made its way into it because the Flash is running on the cover. Running. Right. Unusual. Yeah. So if you look at the cover, it is just action central. You've got Cliff Steele, Robot Man, bashing through a hole in the wall, and on his shoulder is a tiny little Elastigirl, except her arm is bloody huge, and her arm is reaching out across the room, and she's used her arm as a battering ram to get into the room. The Flash is vibrating through the wall and running, and they've got sort of multiple images of the Flash moving across the room. Mm-hmm. And the Chief is chained into his wheelchair and looking stressed out. And there's a great big computer screen, monitor, as is the Doom Patrol style of the day, giant monitors, that's what they're all about.
That's the larger the monitor, the better the technology.
Yes, and there's a giant rocket launching on the monitor with what looks like a sarcophagus jammed on the front of it. And who's launching the rocket? Monsieur Mella, the ape. And he's pressing a big button, and he says, "You're all too late. I've sent Negative Man into outer space forever."
Oh, that wacky gorilla.
Yes. So, I mean, you get the usual spoiler splash page with a bit of action, and then it gets into the plot. So, the Doom Patrol are hanging out in their headquarters. The Chief is testing new weapons that he's designed on Cliff, and he uses these sort of magnetic manacles to pull Cliff against the wall. And then he talks about how he wants to design him a new degaussing cable around his midriff to get depolarized magnetic attacks. So the Chief, always thinking, always working out what to do next.
Mm.
Yeah. Then Elastigirl comes in and she goes giant and pulls Cliff off the wall. And then they talk about how unhappy they are. That she, you know, she's not happy because she, you know, can't get back into movies. And one of the things I love about this, you can tell the difference between Bob Haney. There's a lot of daddy-os and, you know, language of the day.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, I mean, people say, like, Larry walks in and he says, "In the flesh, I mean, in the radioactive glop I've been turned into under these mummy wrappings." Yeah, so there's a lot of groovy and stuff going on.
Excellent.
And the Chief is very, gives him a pep talk, which is very sensitive and, you know, very PC. He says, "Your freak states gave you all unique powers." Anyway, so it doesn't tell us where we cut to, but I reckon it's that made-up country of Paris.
Oh, that place again.
We cut to a scene outside a school, and there's some girls dancing around on the grass in French. There's no midgets dressed up with them, so it's safe.
I told you, we never see Giacomo ever again.
But then it cuts to the secret base under the school where these children are dancing, and we get a great shot of the Brotherhood of Evil singing along to the music that they're listening to.
No.
And it's like the Brotherhood of Evil All-Stars because General Immortus has joined them. So you've got Madame Rouge, Monsieur Mella. Madame Rouge and Monsieur Mella are dancing together.
Oh, my goodness. You have to put up pictures of this. You have and to.
The brain's there, and General Immortus is conducting with a little stick.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, one, because he's joined with the Brotherhood, and oh, my God, two, because of what they're doing.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. And, you know, what are they up to? They're scheming to destroy the Doom Patrol.
No.
It's number one on their to-do list. So they've, you know, They're talking about how to get Larry. They know Larry's weakness. He can only be out of his body for 60 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So what are they going to do? They're going to trick him. Cut back to the Doom Patrol headquarters, and we get the French Surette calling on the giant monitor. So a very French-looking dude, French gendarme cap and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he says they need help to catch a war criminal, a Nazi war criminal. And he's on a plane, and the best way to get him would be for Negative Man to grab him mid-flight and pull him out of there with that suspicious physics that Negative Man uses.
Comic book science, you mean?
Comic book science. They all agree that's a great idea. And then Chief says, then go, go, go! And Negative Man flies out. We get a shot of Larry collapsing. Love it.
I was going to say, you must be loving that.
Yeah. And Negative Man flies, and he's seeing a funeral procession. He's going, that's pretty weird. And then he goes, oh, that's the guy I'm trying to get and in the funeral procession. So he flies down close to the funeral procession. He doesn't notice that the coffin is weird looking and open. Right. And suddenly it traps him. Shuts.
Oh, Larry.
Larry. Doofus. Then we get to part two, Alias Negative Man, which is the title of the entire story. So they say, Operation Lead Coffin is a complete success. So they've named it. And there's a really goofy-looking picture of General Immortus looking very pleased with himself. He's looking a bit Elmer Fudd in this picture.
Oh, no.
But this art is awesome. These letters, fantastic. And at the Doom Patrol headquarters, they work out that Negative Man's been captured, and they go, quick, let's put Larry into suspended animation, because this has happened a couple of times before, I'm guessing. Mm. Yep. So Larry in there, and Chief is looking at his computer, which has little strips of paper coming out of it, because it's an oldie computer. It's
nothing, oh, yeah.
Nothing eye about that computer. Yeah. They say, okay, what can we do? How can we get Larry out of there? And they go, why don't we make them think that Larry's not in there in the first place?
Ooh.
Ah, so the first thing he sets up is a jammer for the radiation that comes from Larry so that no one can detect that his radiation's coming from inside that sarcophagus. Comic book science.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Now, you're going to fall off your chair when you hear about this.
Uh-oh.
The Brotherhood of Evil, they're on the computer monitor talking to someone else. Mm-hmm. It's who could they be talking to? It's Gargoyax.
No.
Yep. Evil wow. All-Stars.
Wow. This issue is insane.
Yep. And Gargoyax is, you know, he's the green fat dude with the moo-moos. He's there, and he said, oh, yep, I'll send a rocket. And so the Doom Patrol head off to fictional France, where they see these crazy pointy buildings and things made of steel. It's
oui.
And there's a lot of skywriting on the way, because they actually go via London on the way somehow. And there's all the skywriting ads for drinks, cola, you know, in different languages.
Okay.
Back on the moon, there's a rocket being launched. So, and then it cuts to someone, who is it? It's just some military dude. He calls up the chief and says, look, there's riots going on all around the world. And you cut to people in, you know, Egypt rioting, and there's people in Mexico rioting, and, you know, they're destroying edifices and public property and all sorts of stuff.
What's
going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Doom Patrol are all standing around getting ready to spring into action when suddenly in walks Negative Man. Everyone freaks out. Why is Negative Man walking around? And then he takes off the bandages, and under there it's The Flash wearing another mask under the bandages.
Wow. I almost forgot that he was meant to be in this story.
No, I know. I'm sorry. It is a... Yeah. Anyway, so the chief pulls out. He's got a Negative Man outfit. So it's like the black shiny one that Negative Man is when he's an energy beam. And he says, why don't you put this on, Flash, and then you can run around the world really fast. That way they'll think Negative Man's on the loose. Brilliant, eh?
Right.
And at the same time, we can investigate all this strange behavior and the rioting. So the Flash goes running around. He's dressed as Negative Man, and he's got a high-speed camera, and he's taking photos as he runs around the world.
Mm-hmm.
All the rioting. And the Brotherhood of Evil getting reports that the Negative Man is on the loose. And they go, well, what's in the coffin? And it's like Schrodinger's coffin. Do they open it? What's in there? You know? And they decide, let's not open it. So, it doesn't go quite to plot for the Doom Patrol, does it?
No.
But anyway, the Flash runs back. He's got the special camera, and they look at the pictures. They project them onto a giant screen. Giant screens, all about the giant screens.
Of course.
The chief applies a filter, and you can see that the writing in the sky doesn't say, you know, beautiful cola. It says, destroy, revolt, kill. Subliminal. Can you say that for me?
Subliminal.
Thank you, Mike. messages in the sky.
Right.
So what are they going to do? So the chief, he talks to his military people. They launch a rocket that blows up this rocket ship that's causing the subliminal messages.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, back at the Brotherhood of Doom base, they've got another rocket, a nice red one, and they stick Larry's coffin on top of it.
Of course.
It's like a rocket with a little coffin on the front. And then they're in Gargrix's spaceship flying around all together. And the Doom Patrol are on their way to them, but Gargurex's little spaceship, which is now in the atmosphere, fires a missile at it.
Uh-oh.
So they're in the plane, missile coming towards them. What do you think would happen?
I reckon Flash somehow diverts the missile.
No, this is the brilliance of Bob Haney. The missile gets close to the plane, and then a net comes out of it, and it scoops up the plane, and then it keeps flying, dragging the plane along.
Right. Of course.
What do we put that down to?
Comic book science.
Thank you, Mike. Yeah. So they don't know what to do, and saying, we can't all get out of here. Chief, you can't get out of there in a wheelchair. And he's going, well, you all have to jump. I'll go down with the plane that's being towed. Anyway, so Robot Man, the Flash in his Negative Man outfit, and Rita, Elastigirl, they all climb out of through the net. They cut a little hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then they jump down, and it's not just splatting on the ground, because Robot Man, he says, legs locked, arms folded, head up, so I don't jar my inner mechanisms, and then he points into the ground. Rita, she makes one leg huge, just one leg, just like one giant step.
Right.
And the Flash does a little sort of vibration to ease himself down with a cushion of air.
Okay.
Flash style, but he looks like Negative Man still. So they all race off, and there they see the rocket has landed. The spaceship has landed next to it. So, and Chief is now trapped inside. And then you get the scene from the cover where Rita makes her arm huge and then gets on Cliff's shoulder because she's really small. And right. Cliff just runs at the wall, and they just sort of battering ran their way in, sort of, you know, Lord of the Rings style through the wall. And the rocket gets launched, and Robot Man gets into a tussle with Monsieur Mella, and Rita makes herself giant as the rocket takes off, and she grabs the rocket, and there's a pop as the sarcophagus flies off the end.
Right.
This comic is insane.
It's... Yes.
So, and Robot Man's fighting Monsieur Mella, and Gargrix is trying to push the chief out into his little getaway spaceship, and Madame Rouge is there, and suddenly Larry's coffin lands next to him, and Robot Man bashes it open, and then Negative Man's able to fly through their rocket and their spaceship and disrupt all the mechanisms, and he grabs the chief and flies him out, and the spaceship explodes, and that would definitely kill the Brotherhood of Evil for all time, I imagine.
Hooray!
Hey.
Yeah. Wow, that comic does sound insane.
It's a good one. I was actually really impressed with how good it was.
Wow.
Like, I think it actually edges out the quality of the current Doom Patrol, of the Doom Patrol of that era.
Wow.
Just for, you know, fun and insaneness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Holy anyway, geez. I say goodbye to the Flash, and he runs off. Doesn't walk, runs.
Of course not. He's the Flash.
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. Wow. So that was that one. Now, okay, let's... now, there was a Flash appearance on the cover of issue 29 of volume 2, which is one of the chapters of The Painting That Ate Paris.
Okay.
Yeah, he's on the cover, but he's not inside the book.
Yes, I remember that now. Yes, true.
So we won't mention it at all on the podcast.
No, not at all. I'll just edit this bit out.
Okay, thanks.
And the next proper team-up between
sort of
yeah
sort
between of. The Flash and the Doom Patrol was in Justice League Europe Volume 1 Number 32 from, let's say, November 1991. Now this one I was not even aware of. I mean, I knew of the previous one. This one was brand new to me.
Okay. This is a chapter of a Justice League crossover called Breakdowns. Mm-hmm. So this was the Giffen DeMatteis League. So it was a sort of humor-based Justice mm-hmm. League. It was the one with the one punch, the famous one punch, where Batman punched out Guy Gardner.
Poor old guy.
And it had Booster Gold and Blue Beetle becoming a team together. Mm-hmm. You know, wackiness all over the place. So, but Breakdowns was kind of the crossover to round out that era where things got serious and, you know, like Maxwell Lord, the sort of administrative leader of the team, has been shot by unknown assassin. He's in a coma and there's been a lot of sabotage. So the United Nations have kicked the Justice League out of their embassies and severed ties with them. So the league is really on the back foot. And because of that, they end up returning to their former headquarters on Rhode Island, the Happy Harbor Cave Complex.
Oh, yes.
Which is where the Doom Patrol currently reside. Mm. So this came out in November 91. So this was around the time that Doom Patrol 49 was out. So the sort of that's the return of Brotherhood of Dada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's in the, I think it's in the Magic Bus collection, if you are a...
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, so anyway, so the whole Justice League International, so you've got members of the America branch and the Europe branch, have all gathered at the Justice League, at the former headquarters, just at the entrance, and they're not sure, you know, where sleeping quarters and everything, so they send off Blue Beetle and Elongated Man to check it out, and they're soon joined by The Flash. So I'm cutting out all the stuff which isn't really to do with that plot line, just because it's talking about a crossover we're not concerned with that much.
Mm-hmm.
I will point out that this was when Blue Beetle was overweight, which is not my favourite depiction of Blue Beetle. I do like my Blue Beetle, and I don't mind him being the butt of some jokes, but you know, this was just a step too far, I thought.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, so they're exploring around the place and the Flash joins them. And this is Wally West, the current Flash of that day, mm-hmm. who was the former Kid Flash. So he's like the Robin to the original Flash.
Yes.
If the original Flash was Batman, if you get my analogy.
Yes, thank you, Paul.
Thank you. This is for the people who don't know.
They're out right, there. Okay. Sorry, yes. Sorry, didn't mean to gatekeep or anything there, anyone.
Yeah. Anyway. They soon find themselves in a very peculiar Dali-esque looking place where, you know, the walls are melting, everything's multicolored, there's, you know, smiling suns and moons and giant floating fish and all sorts of stuff.
Uh-oh.
And they're confronted by a chest of drawers with a body which starts talking to them and doing some really terrible puns. And so he says, you know, stop staring at my chest and things like that.
Oh, God.
And this, to be honest, this goes on way too long. So, right. So it's all rainbows and floating stairs and, you know, all that. So they're wandering around and then they come to a basically a flying nose. It's a giant nose with wings on it. There's lots of freaking out. And there's like there's about 8 pages of this stuff. And they get told that to exit they have to go through this nose, which is dripping snot. And,
oh, what?
Yeah. And... Yeah.
I suppose it was the 90s. Everything was, you know, grim and gritty.
Well, no, this ain't grim and gritty. It's, yeah.
Just disgusting.
Anyway, I'll continue. The Flash gets jack of this and starts swirling around and basically blows the entire illusion away, and they find themselves in the corridors as they should be expecting.
I thought you were going to say he blew the nose away.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway. Oh, dear. And the upshot of all of this is they finally open a door and there's the chief sitting there and he just yells at them, get out of here, and slams the door. And that is the meeting of the Flash with Doom Patrol on this occasion.
What?
And they decide to leave him alone.
That's it?
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, this is written by, who we got here? It's written by Keith Giffen with Jared Jones, so the two Justice League writers of the day. The pencils are by Derek Robertson, who went on to do Transmetropolitan and really made his mark on that, and The Boys and comics like that.
Yes.
So this was before he had discovered his edgy comics to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Ink by John Beatty. Executive editor is Dick Giordano, the penciler of the previous story we talked about. Yeah.
Nice.
And who else we got? Colorist Gene D'Angelo, letterer Willie Schubert, and editors Andrew Helfer and Kevin Dooley. So, I don't know. My commentary on this is it's a bit like some of the other writers looking at what was happening on the Doom Patrol and doing a really bad job of trying to mimic it. You know, like it really is just nonsense for the sake of it.
Yeah. And,
you know, I mean, perhaps this is a flat spot in the crossover where they had a bit of time to kill before the, you know, the significant events happened. But it really is a very strange comic. I mean, there's some good back and forwards between the characters as they try to cope with what's there. But, you know, it really isn't what I call the Doom Patrol. You know, the weirdness is just there for no good reason.
It's, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, not a strong one.
Disappointing.
Yeah. But interesting to note that is called, the title of this story is The Center Cannot Hold. And this is from a famous poem by W.B. Yeats called The Second Coming. So I thought, I looked that up and I thought I'd read the first verse out of that because it's lots of names that get used in comics all the time. So it says, turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the centre cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Etc. So that's nice.
Classy.
It's a bit of culture there for you, mate.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Thanks, Governor.
No worries.
No, that was good. That was good.
Okay. Moving on.
Moving on.
The final book we're going to look at tonight is another edition of Brave and the Bold.
Volume 3 this Volume time. Three. Issue number 8 from January of 2008.
And this was between Doom Patrol runs, so we'd finished with the Byrne run, but we didn't yet have the Giffen run started.
Yeah. And once again, it's almost a reboot of the team, from what I understand, because I'm not sure if they appeared anywhere else prior to this story.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I think... Had they appeared in the Titans at this point? I think they might have appeared in the Titans, in the Geoff Johns Titans.
We could be wrong. They may have, because there's a scene where the Chief is talking about Vox and Mento, Bumblebee and Beast Boy. So, possibly.
Yeah, I'd say so.
But, I actually really liked this volume of Brave and the Bold, and I was getting it in trades initially, and then the single issues up until it just faded into nothing when Straczynski was writing it. But I'm not holding a grudge or anything.
I think some of that Straczynski stuff is pretty strong, actually.
Oh, so do I. I really enjoyed it. And then it vanished. It disappeared.
I wasn't big on the Milestone crossover.
It was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anywho. This one, it opens with, you know, old friends of the Doom Patrol, the Challengers of the Unknown, who are actually reading the Book of Destiny, which is sort of a plot device which is carried through the series a little bit at this point.
Part of the thing is no one can read the Book of Destiny without going insane, but they have a special loophole because they are... guys who live on borrowed time, so they're not meant to be there, so they're not, they're sort of exempt from the rules of Book of Destiny. Comic book science, everyone.
We've then got the Challengers reading the book, and it takes them to a scene showing Linda and Wally West having a heated discussion about the unstable powers that their children Iris and, I'm going to say, Jai? are developing. Yep. It's we'll got J-A-I, but we'll go with Jai. Could be J. Not sure.
Could be J. It's Jai.
And Linda is basically saying, you know, why do you keep tearing up this mail that Dr. Niles Calder is sending you? You know, he could potentially help our children. And obviously Wally knows better than that. And he's quite apprehensive about having anything to do with Calder. Can't blame him, really.
Calder's always, he's not a weirdo.
No, not at all.
He never sewed a dog's head to another dog.
Look, that was back in the 60s, man.
Married a homeless, Indian girl.
Anyway, they then use a Justice League teleporter to take them to the headquarters of the Doom Patrol at this stage, which is a castle in Prague. Now, I've obviously missed something by this stage, because when did that happen?
I'm pretty sure the castle is mentioned. Well, Prague is definitely mentioned in the Teen Titans of the Day run.
Right.
Where Geoff Johns did the story about the Doom Patrol trying to recruit Kid Devil.
Ah, okay. I think.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure Prague's in that, which is something we will cover in an upcoming episode.
Yeah, I do recall Niles trying to recruit Kid Devil.
Yeah.
Part of my brain had forgotten all about Prague.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the kids and their parents.
Prague is always cheap for movies. I mean, that's why things like Van Helsing get filmed there and Hellboy and that. Because, you know, they've got really good tax rates for that sort of thing. So Chief might have been wanting a bit of a tax concession on a
maybe
base.
Just probably fell on theorizing. Hard times.
Yeah.
Comic book budgeting.
Yes.
So yeah, the West family stood out the front of this rather spooky looking castle, and the door creaks open and you just see Niles Calder's scary looking face initially.
Well, everything about this place is scary, isn't it?
And then, of course, Rita sticks her head around the door and she's going, "Oh, Chief, where are your manners? Honestly." And she's much more greeting to the West family.
Grinning like a sunbeam.
Yeah, she has the weird grin that Geoff Johns seems to have given her in their Justice League appearance late last year.
She's sort of forgotten how to be human and is doing her best to be normal.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So anyway, the kids...
Elastiness.
The kids seem to be quite excited at the prospect of exploring this spooky old castle. So they run off with Rita. Niles takes Wally and Linda away to talk about what they can do to look into their kids' powers. This is when the kids freak out when they realize that they're about, 3 meters away from Rita whilst holding her hand and her arms have stretched. And the kids have freaked out.
It's a great image of them looking back and there's tiny Rita with these great long arms in the leading right up in the foreground.
And Iris is going, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God."
Yeah.
And Jay's going, "Ew, I touched her hand." So as the children are running away, what do they hear but the loud clanking of metallic footsteps?
In the shadowy hall.
They see this spooky-looking robot thing come down the hallway. Of course, it's Cliff Steele. And what does he say to these terrified kids? Flesh. So, of course, the kids run away screaming. Who do they then run into next in the shadows? Negative Man standing there in his bandages and his coat.
Yeah, looking like the mummy more than he ever has before.
So I love that this is such a funny issue and that, you know, the Doom Patrol are just being themselves. And
they are screwing with these two kids.
Well, maybe a little. We then see the Chief explaining to the Wests what exactly he's going to do to investigate the kids' powers. And we get a guest appearance by Metamorpho, which was cool.
Yeah, but there's a monitor in this room. It's a big monitor, isn't there?
Yeah.
What's on the monitor, Mike? What's on the monitor?
Well, that's where we've got pictures of people, Paul. We've got Beast Boy and Bumblebee.
Doom Patrol associates.
And Vox, yep.
Well, there's another one there, isn't
there? Yes, Mento is there.
Hey!
He looks ridiculous. He looks... Oh, God, I hate that guy. He looks so stupid. He looks like a B-grade Ant-Man. With the way that helmet looks. God. Deary me. Anyway.
Put it on the Mento appearance list.
God, I can't wait to do his issue.
Yay.
Before too long, the Wests are sitting down to dinner with the Doom Patrol. It's not exactly the best dinner in the world. Things get more and more out of hand. Wally is basically saying, look, let's just get on with it. Let's find out what's wrong with my kids. But, you know, if you do anything to hurt them, it's curtains for you, Calder, basically. Mm. So, and that's kind of when it gets even worse.
What would make people more uncomfortable at this dinner? It's a bit like the dinner in the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit, sort of.
Except instead of a monkey brain, you've got Cliff showing a young boy his brain.
Yes, he pops open his skull, pulls his brain out to get some food into it. And there's lots of the Flash and Linda shielding the children's eyes and yelling.
Yeah, pretty much it. So after the meal, yeah, they go ahead, they do the experiment. Of course it goes completely wrong. And all hell breaks loose, and the basement laboratory starts, you know, crashing down. And of course, the Flash just wants to save his kids. Interesting enough, Calder being the bastard that he is, he says, "You've only got time to choose one child to save. Which do you save?"
That's messed up.
Yeah, that's classic Niles, or classic modern age Niles, I should say, being the Anyway. Of course, the Flash thinks about it for a minute, and they come up with a plan to save the kids. They take Cliff's armor, wrap it around Jay, and they get...
Jai.
The boy.
The male young child.
The son. And because they realized earlier that Iris was able to actually punch the negative energy being, because she figured out the vibrational frequency... thanks to comic book science, they got her to vibrate at that same speed, and they got the negative being to cloak her successfully. And of course, that saved the day, saved the kids.
Yeah.
But of course, Wally was not a happy man.
No.
No.
They make their leave of the Doom Patrol,
Teleport
back to wherever they live in America.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Wally does reveal that he did make a choice. When which kid? We never find out which, but yeah, that kind of tears poor Wally up a bit.
Yeah.
And Linda looks shocked. What
Cut
I did
back
love...
to the challenges reading it, the whole story.
Yeah.
In the Book of Destiny.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, poor Rocky from the challenges, he looks like he is slightly going mad. That's the thing.
Mm.
It's the book's not meant to affect them, but it looks like it is having an effect on them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I quite like this story. Also like the fact that when the Wests left Prague, you know, the chief's looking at them take off in the teleportation beam and he goes, what unpleasant people. Dude,
yeah.
You're so messed up.
Yeah. And, I mean, you can't go wrong with this book. It's written by Mark Waid, awesome writer, and it's penciled by George Perez.
They'll never
legend.
Go anywhere, those two. Oh, yes, yeah. Legend. Yeah, I really like this issue. It was a really good one.
And it's out of a very good run. If you get the first 12 issues of this, it's a really good story, the whole saga. And it's a story that goes from character to character and carries the thread of the story while changing the stars of the story as it goes.
Exactly.
Yep. Excellent.
Excellent stuff.
Excellent.
So,
totally rate it.
Totally rate it.
Yeah. Totally rate it.
So do you think we will potentially have many more Doom Patrol and Flash team-ups in the near future, Paul?
Well, the Flash is a very unpopular character, so I don't know that much would happen. I mean, I can't see the Flash doing much for the Doom Patrol at this stage,
right.
Considering, you know, they're the headline.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Look, the fact that there were posters in the Flash TV show for a movie called The Rita Farr Story.
Yes.
That alone has given me hope.
How bad do you want to see that?
Oh, God. Oh, can't contain my excitement.
That's the best movie ever.
Anyway, that's another round of Doom's planning done.
Doom Patrol and Flash, we salute you.
Yes. Good work, everyone.
Okay, over to the mailbag of Doom. And the mailbag is bursting to the seams today because we have an email.
Oh, wow.
We received an email from one Dr. Ange.
Oh, Dr. Ange?
Yeah. when his messages can't be contained in tweets, he switches over to email. He's, yeah, turns it up a bit.
Wow. Mm. What did the doctor have to say? What was the question of the week?
Well, he's not answering the question of the week, so we'll do that after this, eh?
Oh, okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, oh, jeez. Okay. Just wanted to say how much I enjoyed the show. Shut up, Mike. As a huge Doom Patrol fan in almost all the incarnations, damn you, Byrne, I think this show is brilliant. And this episode, reviewing the Showcase and DCCP issue, DC Comics Presents, warranted longer comments than Twitter could accommodate. I was 7 when the Showcase issues came out. I had never heard of the Patrol before, but I saw the ads trumpeting their return of both Showcase and the Doom Patrol and said, I must have it. There is something undeniably cool about the name Doom Patrol. And the logo then, with Doom being all weird, was enough to make me seek it out. He was there. He was there at the beginning. Dr. Wow. Ange. What a legend. There was so much to digest in this issue. The scene of the half cliff crawling from the ocean, the recap at the end of the original Patrol, the new improved, debatable, bug-like robot man was striking to me, and then meeting the new team with the classic first we fight motif was nifty as well. There was a new team, so this was a new starting point. Not knowing that much about Larry, I will freely admit that the first thing I noticed about Valentina was her plunging neckline, 7-year-old hormones, and not her lack of bandages. And then learning more about the Doom Patrol's origins with Niles and Immortus really made me feel like this was a rich experience, learning enough about the old team but moving forward with the new. Even as a kid, though, I felt there was something icky about Niles meeting Arani as a kid and coming back to marry her. Yes, that is icky.
Yep.
Your icky radar is on that one. And that creepy feeling only grew as I grew older. As you say, the last issue felt like a tacked-on ending. I wonder if there would be more clamour for the team if the showcase run ended on the second and superior part rather than the Cossack plot. Although, kudos for continuity with Matt Cable. While you guys jumped ahead to the DCCP issue, remember that Robot Man teamed up with the New Titans a year earlier in New Teen Titans 13 to 15. That brought the band together, Beast Boy, Mento, first insane version, and the Brotherhood of Evil. It was there that Cliff was first seen back in his old body. Anyways, it is odd to see Ambush Bug in the DCP issue as a straight-up villain. He appears in Daring New Adventures of Supergirl as a villain weirdo a little later. Then we get him as a straight-up hero moving forward. Thanks for the podcast. I'll be listening and tweeting to you both. That's true, he is. Hoping the Doom Clock can be reset soon. It looks like I might start my own Supergirl Clock with her cancellation. Ange.
Thanks, Dr. Ange.
Thanks, Dr. Ange. Great letter.
Yeah.
Yes, we know about those New Teen Titans issues. We're going to look at them soon.
Mm, yes.
Yes. And then we may even talk about them. Anyway. All right, our question of the week was, how and where do you store your comics? So we heard from Rift, and he said, I'm first. No tardy comments for me this week. I called him a tardy bastard last time we recorded.
Mm. Mm.
Yes, and he says, I steal the printer paper boxes from work, special ones in plastic sleeves. Nice.
Wow. Ben D, at Punk Rock Sellout on Twitter, he said he stores his in the cloud, along with 24 long boxes from his youth, also in his daughter Cammy's short box in her room.
Mm. Yeah, the reason we want to know is if we ever come to your house is we want to steal them and we want to know exactly how to do this. So next week we'll be asking your addresses.
Oh,
anyway.
My God.
And we also heard from Richie O'Hara Beeman, Rickety OB, and he said, in the magical phone tablet wizardry, various bookshelves throughout the house, bedside table, and in my filing cabinet at work, secretly. Don't tell anyone.
Not so secret anymore. Karthik Kakarala, he said he has them bagged and boarded. When he gets to them, he has stacks of them. He also has short boxes made of corrugated plastic, and for now, in the attic. It's really awesome.
Good. Shmoby1, he said, small number of boxes in the bedroom, a large number of boxes in the furthest reaches of a storeroom that requires an expedition to get to. Yes.
I'm a bit jealous of anyone that has a storeroom for their comics. But anyway, at Unlikely Nerd, a friend of the show, Chris, he said, bagged and boarded in short and long boxes in a closet in his room, also on every table and desk in his room, and some are in frames.
Ooh, nice. We heard from Jay Bandoy, and he said, short boxes and various didn't read it piles. Didn't read it TM piles. As long as they're not in wife's sight, I'm okay. Out of sight, out of mind.
Ooh. I hope she's not listening in, Jay. at Charming Red.
Shout out to Jay's wife.
at Charming Red. Shut up, Paul. She said most of her comics are in long boxes.
What, Mike?
Paul.
Sorry.
I'll start that again. at Charming Red.
No, thank you.
Friend of the show, Jessica, she said most of her comics are in long boxes. However, after a hectic schedule the past few months, piles by publisher and title have formed. She's also run out of bags and boards and would rather spend the money on more comics. She has a reckoning upon her.
I totally get not spending money on bags and boards when you can buy a comic.
We'll talk later. Yep.
We heard from Mr. Panderson at Panderson Art. He says, in a pile in the cupboard, some in shoeboxes, sometimes in the paper bag I bought it in, boards and sleeves can go hang.
Wow.
Whoa, what a rebel.
Jesus.
Rebel without a board.
Yes. Jess Camacho at Camacho Jess. She said she can't store comics because she's a girl and girls are just social justice warriors who just want to mess up comics.
Getting a little bit political there.
A little bit? Holy jeez. God.
We love you, Jess. You can do anything with comics that you want, as far as I'm concerned.
Follow your dreams. We're living proof. Who else did we hear from?
We heard from Sam Marks, S Marks underscore, one of the Didn't Read It crew. Sometimes friends, sometimes enemies, eh? Did you hear Mr. Obert's read out saying a bit of Down Under on the end of the last podcast?
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well.
I really annoyed you by asking him to do that, didn't I?
What did Sam have to say, Paul?
Keeping on track. Stay on target. Stay on target. You've switched off your targeting computer. Sorry. My friend just bought a house and moved all his comics unbagged, boarded in plastic bins. I almost died.
And he said,
I need about things. Bags, boards, in short boxes in the closet. Big IKEA expedite shelves for trade paperbacks, hardcovers.
See, now you're talking. That's just... God. We also heard from Susan Canary at black_canary02. She said, long boxes, of course, although the ones she's reading are in a stack next to her chair, but eventually long boxes, and trade paperbacks are on the shelf.
Yeah, we heard from Mitra, son of Nell, who's Mitbot. Mm-hmm. That's Wilfred's girlfriend, I believe. She says, I have a special box and it is on the shelf at the head of my bed. Also in my mind palace.
So Mitra.
We heard from C.R. Pachonic. Anyway, supervisors, spinner racks and piles spread out over the house. Nice.
Oh, I wonder if it's an old school spinner rack like the old grocery. So would I. That'd be awesome. Alison B at VA Gentle Nerd. She said she stores her comics in a very uncomfortable place. And I replied with a question like the back of a Volkswagen, and she really appreciated that.
Boom, boom. we heard from Kenya Explains It All. She said some are bagged and boarded in boxes in the basement. Lots of B alliteration there. Mm. Many are in to-be-read piles around my bedroom. Nice.
Nice. We heard from Dr. Ange yet again. He said the dad area of the house, how lucky is he? He's got his own area of the house. The dad area of the house is unfortunately the unfinished basement. And it has drawer boxes, bagged and board, and alphabetized comics. The wall... also has his earliest Supergirl commissions and a couple of original art pages. And he has a work table and a Supergirl merchandise shrine.
You are just showing off now, Dr. Hinch.
Yes.
Really? Draw boxes, I've heard of them. I've never seen one. God. They're the like custom comic things that you can stack and they open drawers and you don't have to have lids and all that. You know, you can get at everything from the front. Wow. Jealous.
God.
Jealous. Right, we heard from the dancing gamer, Satara Rax. I bag board my comics and store them after they pile up for a few months in long boxes.
Nice. That is good and sensible, Satara.
Yeah. We also heard from Lockie, who I believe is our youngest listener that I know of.
Okay.
Hey Lockie. He listens to the podcast on the bus.
Oh, hey, mate. Hey, Lockie. Keep it
What's
real.
What's happening on the bus? What's out the window? Trees. Yeah, anyway. He said, my best ones are in a drawer and my book ones are on the bookshelf. He's got a Rocket Raccoon comic he really likes. He's got a few Sonics.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
That stuff.
We also finally heard from Grant Robinson on the Facebook page.
Robbo.
And Grant said,
"Flame and top bloke."
He uses bags, boards, long boxes in his man cave, and all his signed, quote unquote, valuable and favorite ones are framed on his walls. Nicely done. Well, nicely done.
Living the dream.
What about you, Paul?
Yeah. You might be jealous of me because I live on a rural property, so it's got a house and it's got lots of outlying sheds and everything. But I've done my best to never put my comics in the sheds just because of spiders and possums and...
Moths?
Rain. Moths, yes. Don't mention the moths, you bastard. Anyway, so, yeah, I have, on the outside of my house, I have technically a gun room for keeping guns.
Right.
So naturally, I keep comics in it and no guns. Because I don't own a gun. I'm not American.
Oh, God.
Boom, boom. Anyway, and there's various cupboards around the house, and it's like Tetris because I'm always trying to get the box that's in the wrong spot and moving things around. And they drift around the house depending on what I'm trying to do. So, you know, like for instance, if you start doing a Doom Patrol podcast, you may have to move a lot of boxes around to find the comics that you need to pull out and look at.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, what about you, mate?
I have one bookcase which has exactly 5 shelves in it. And the majority of that has the current stuff that I'm reading. And it's all sorted in a semi-logical, Michael logic type way. And then I have about, I don't know, let's say a bunch of long and short boxes hidden
Grapes
around the house.
Bunch, mate. Boxes don't.
Yeah, I've got a few boxes hidden around the house for safekeeping. So, and that's
I forgot to mention, I have like lots and lots of trades. Like the majority of my collecting now is trades and hardcovers. So I have bookshelves with that stuff. But I haven't sorted them all out. So a lot of them are actually in a glass display cabinet lying flat, which makes no sense.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so it's a mess.
So yeah, I've got them all bagged and boarded, unless they're a trade paperback, all on the one bookcase for the current stuff that I'm reading. If it's a finished series, it'll be safely stored away in a box and hidden somewhere where it won't get in anyone's way.
Yes. Yeah, I don't rate the board. Don't rate the board at all.
You don't?
No. Bag's good. Bag's keeps the dust and the rain off. But like
And the moths.
But... This may shock you, but I'm quite partial to putting 2 or 3 comics in a bag.
Well, that's a good replacement for a board, I guess.
Yeah. Actually, you can store like 1 or 2 more comics in a box if you do that, if you're not doing the single bag board combo.
Well, now you're just encouraging us all to spend more, Paul.
I'm a rebel.
You are.
I'm a bloody bush ranger.
Oh, God. On that note, I think that's pretty much our show for this week. We will sign off for now. If you wish to get in touch with us, you can chat with Wilfred, the Sentient Show account, at WFDpod on Twitter. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, and you can also reach us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page.
Yeah, and actually, we're nearly at the end of the show. The show is about to end, and the first thing you should do after this is give us a rating on iTunes, because give us a review. Because Mike cries. He's always crying to me. Oh, I haven't got enough review.
What are we going to be talking
about? Come on, mate. I don't want to change out you for a different guest star. You know, done good as a guest star so far. But
wow. What are we going to be talking about next week?
if
there's still a show.
I think it's time to talk about the state of Doom Patrol collections. Mm-hmm. What's in and out of print? What's around? How do you read this stuff? Mm. This glorious, glorious book that we talk about. What's out there? Because we hear a lot of stories. People are always coming up to me in the street and saying, I want to read the Doom Patrol, what's around? Or I'm reading the Doom Patrol, where's Volume 2? So I think this one's a timely one.
Timely. Very timely.
Yeah.
Okay. That's our show. Thanks for listening, guys. We will catch you again next time.
What's that ticking? Bye.
It's just me crying in the corner, you bastard.